Yeah, sometimes it's nice to hear a familiar voice. Matt Mittler here with Kaufman's Holiday. We're nearing the end of part two of this saga, The Man in the Tunnel, and embarking on episode 9. Things have been a bit rough for our hero, but that's how we like it on Sunday Night Noir. Kaufman just got off the train, and if you just got off the train, well, we're now in post-war Germany, and starting off with chapter 55. How do they fit? Lieutenant Samuels crossed over to a fraying, tufted chair and settled himself in. He was lean and fit and appeared almost youthful, but for the pouches behind his wire rims. The khakis were a little tight. Kaufman tucked in the army tee as best he could and cinched the canvas belt.
They'll do, Lieutenant. Thanks.
Ulrika can probably get the blood out of your shirt, but the tie's kaput.
She did a swell job with these bandages. Must be nice to have a Fraulein around the house.
The lieutenant didn't blink. I rescued her. She was being raped by a gang of soldiers. Kaufman hung his head.
Evil fucking Nazis.
Wasn't Nazis. Some of our own. Samuel stood, flipped the sun lenses down over his glasses. Evil is not proprietary around here, Mr. Kaufman. If you're ready, we should go see the general. Can you walk all right? What did Kaufman have to complain about? A fall from a moving train? Temporary lapse of consciousness?
I doubt I'd place for the Olympics, he answered, but I'll get by.
As he hobbled out of the lieutenant's requisitioned home, he caught sight of the girl scrubbing away at his shirt by the kitchen sink. She looked up at him and he tensed, nodded his head, and quickly looked away. General Marchbanks sat stiffly behind a desk the size of Guam. He was examining a pile of papers, filing some, stamping others, and tossing the rest on the floor, where a pie-eyed private retrieved them and deposited them properly in a copper trash bin.
Samuel says you're all right. So, I guess you're all right.
He stopped for a moment and squinted at Kaufman. The room was dark, and his eyes seemed like black coals. Even with the windows opened, sunlight could barely squeeze through the trees. They were deep in the gloomy forests of the Harz Mountains, in a chateau most likely built by malevolent trolls. General Marchbanks solemnly returned to the task before him.
You can escort him to the camp, Samuels, but no photos and no questions.
Samuel saluted smartly.
Yes, sir. Thank you, General, sir.
The general looked up again.
The war's over, Mr. Koffler, or whoever the hell you are. And people want good guys, and they want bad guys, and they want to be able to tell the difference. Go ahead. Try.
Kaufman was tempted to salute.
Thank you, General Marchbanks, he replied.
Don't thank me, the general intoned. You never even saw me.
Guess he didn't buy the ID.
Doesn't matter. It got you here,
and it'll get you out. Leave it to Colonel Suick to pull a stunt like that. Wasn't sure how Marchbanks would take it, but had to give protocol a try. Samuels readjusted his shades. Figured we had a 50-50 chance.
Not the best odds.
I did it for the Colonel. He would have done it for me with the cards stacked.
He's a good man.
He's a man, that's all.
Samuels put the Jeep into third and bounded up a rocky path.
A mensch.
The Harts had a primordial feel. Gnarled trees twisting into a striated sky loomed high over their heads. This was a land of fear and superstition, primitive, pagan. Kaufman didn't want to be here. From the way Samuels was driving, he didn't want to be here either.
"It'll take another 90 minutes to get to the camp," he said. "We can stop off for some knockwurst on the way. There's an inn that's friendly to the Allies."
"Meaning there are inns that aren't?"
"What do you think?"
Kaufman mulled it over.
"Whether they fought or not, I guess every German lost the war."
"Yeah. Funny, though. With every goddamn German you meet, none of them fought, and none of them were Nazis. If we weren't forbidden to fraternize, I'd have 100 new best friends who'd just as soon murder me in my sleep."
The Jeep took a bone-rattling slam, flying over a mine hole. Samuels continued.
"But it's one thing being a Yank over here, and another being a Yankee Doodle Jew. You want to see a German turn to dust? Just say, 'Ich bin eine Jude.' The smile goes first. Then they just vanish before your eyes."
"Guess that doesn't work quite the same for chortling Poles."
Kaufman examined his body for further damage. Samuels gave him a look.
"They wouldn't have been laughing if they'd seen a camp." "Welcome to Dora Middlebau."
Samuels sounded a million miles away. They got out of the Jeep and stood motionless inside the monolithic gates. Barbed wire topped the cement walls surrounding the camp, which was further encased by a barrier of barren mountains. Sun hinted through an overcast sky, but there was something dark here that no light could illuminate. The air was heavy. It weighed on Kaufman's shoulders. He considered the sausage in his stomach. Maybe he should have foregone lunch. On an open field, mounds of earth rested by gaping holes that had clearly been mass graves. There were no bodies in sight, but there were bodies everywhere.
"What did you say?" asked Samuels.
"What?"
answered Kaufman.
"I thought you said something."
Kaufman's brow bunched.
It was Hebrew. The mourner's Kaddish."
Samuels took off his shades and pinched the spot above his nose, placed them back on, and walked away.
"Sometimes that's all you can do. Pray. Go on, take a look. I'll wait here."
What did Kaufman expect? A guided tour? Who'd want to guide anyone around here? Wind swirled the yellow dust at his feet, swept it up in wisps, and trailed it through the air. Soldiers worked in clusters, dismantling machinery, carting away debris, entering and exiting what looked like barren factories. Kaufman wandered across the main yard, a stamped document clipped between the tips of his digits. Safe passage, courtesy of General Marchbanks. There was a brick structure in the center with one squat smokestack. Kaufman had heard stories,
but preferred not to believe them. He sputtered to a halt and looked for something else to occupy his sights. A smaller, flat-roofed building off to the side seemed relatively benign. He ventured in to find himself in a barracks of sorts. But no officers' quarters these. 100 or so wood-slatted triple-deckers lined the walls, leaving only a narrow aisle down the middle. Puddles on the cement floor collected flies and mosquitoes. A sickening stink sideswiped him. He started to gag and whipped himself out the door.
"Hey! No civilians allowed!"
An iron-jawed corporal tramped over, rifle ready. Kaufman lifted the paper in his hand, and the young man snapped it up.
"Well, you shouldn't be unaccompanied, Mr. Koffler. Who's your escort?"
"Lieutenant Samuels."
Kaufman gestured over to the entrance, where the lieutenant circled the jeep, kicking stones in the road. The corporal relaxed, placed the butt of his weapon on the ground.
"Oh, Lieutenant Samuels."
He nodded his head.
"He doesn't like to enter the camp if he doesn't have to. Don't blame him."
He handed the document back to Kaufman.
"Journalist, huh?"
Kaufman met the corporal's official gaze. The eyes softened. Now he was just another kid far from home.
"Yeah, Look Magazine," Kaufman said. "Doing a piece on Patrick Walsh."
The corporal rubbed his cheek.
"Walsh? He was in my platoon. Why him?"
"He got a Purple Heart, right?"
The corporal laughed.
"Purple Heart? For what?"
Kaufman smacked his lips.
"For an injury suffered at the hands of the enemy, right here at Dora Middlebow. Guess you never heard about that."
"Whee-wee!"
The corporal took off his helmet. It was pitted and creased with bullet trails.
"No, sir. Never heard that one."
"Then I suppose you never heard that he was murdered when he got back stateside."
They shuffled across the parade grounds, both staring at their feet. The corporal, probably just because he was drained. Kaufman, because he was afraid to look up. He'd caught sight of a series of wooden gallows, maybe 100 of them, in neat and tidy rows. The precision was unbearable.
"If you need somebody to say something nice about Patrick Walsh, I just don't think I can help you."
"I'll take the truth straight, Corporal. Leave it to my editors whether they want to water it down or not."
The corporal scratched a patch of peach fuzz on his chin.
"The guy was rotten. Did rotten things to people. Certain people."
"People who were different, you mean?"
"Yeah."
"So, like, if you were a Jew, you'd be in trouble."
"I'm not a Jew."
Perhaps the corporal was a bit too defensive on that point. Kaufman wondered if he even knew what a Jew was before the war.
"So I guess you could say Walsh wasn't quite a team player."
"Sloughed off, nasty attitude. Didn't care about anything."
"And yet he came in here and rescued people."
They approached the rocky mountainside and stopped before a cavernous hole. The corporal pointed straight ahead into the murky blur.
"I don't know about rescues. There weren't many prisoners left alive," he explained. "Walsh did go into that tunnel, though. But I bet he only went in because he figured the Germans were mining for gold or something. He wasn't even supposed to be on premises. His buddy ran in after him."
"Bradley Glenn?"
"Yeah, Glenn."
Kaufman took a step inside. The earthen walls were propped with wood beams leading in on a downward slope. The air was cold and wet, had a metallic taste that caused Kaufman's lungs to constrict. He still had that sickening odor from the barracks swirling in his head, and the combination was beginning to make him woozy.
"It's not stable,"
warned the corporal. His voice echoed inside. It seemed to engulf Kaufman.
"No lights?"
Kaufman forced his feet to keep moving, inching forward into the void.
"Power's been cut. This tunnel wasn't even finished, anyhow."
Kaufman proceeded. Couldn't help imagining himself walking into some mammoth grave. If any of the braces gave way, he'd be entombed in an instant. A creak from above.
"Maybe Walsh was bopped by a beam," he called back.
"Maybe. I wouldn't know,"
came the response. Another groan overhead, and a thin veil of sand drizzled down the back of Kaufman's neck.
"Glenn was there," the corporal shouted, his voice beginning to strain. "You could ask him."
"I tried and got nothing. That's why I'm here."
But exactly where he was becoming less certain. There was no more up or down, no left or right. He was completely enveloped in shadow. A muffled thud, like a body falling, seized what little breath he had left. He tried to take a few more steps, but his feet would no longer be commanded. Something grazed his hair. A noose? He began to coil in on himself in the dark, shrinking. He was hardly even there anymore. He'd crossed over.
"I guess you could always try asking the prisoner."
A louder noise sounded, shook the earth under Kaufman's feet. Prisoner? That was all the excuse he needed. He reeled around, a pinpoint of light ahead. Behind, a thousand corpses reaching out their fleshless hands. He scrambled back towards the opening.
"What, prisoner?"
he asked breathlessly. The corporal unwrapped a stick of Wrigley's and propped it between his teeth, gazed pensively into the shadowy mouth of the tunnel.
"Two men went in, sir, and three men came out. The third was a prisoner. But what's weird is that, I mean, this whole thing with getting a Purple Heart? Jesus, I saw more action than Walsh ever did. You should tell the magazine to do a piece on me, 'cause there sure weren't any krauts in that hole. The few that were here in the camp at all, they just surrendered soon as we came in. This tunnel here," he nodded his head. "I remember when they came out with that prisoner. Walsh was all bloody and everything, but all we found inside there afterwards was just another prisoner. And he was dead." Kaufman brought his paw to his forehead, wiped off a shield of sweat.
"Was there any investigation?"
The soldier shrugged.
"I really wouldn't know, sir. You'd have to talk to General Marchbanks about that."
"Marchbanks, right. But somehow Walsh gets clunked, gets a medal, gets out, and gets home."
"It ain't easy getting home, sir. You gotta have points."
He towed a groove in the dirt.
"Guess he had enough of them, then. Glenn returned about the same time. He must have had points, too, or something."
"Or something."
Kaufman looked back down the tunnel.
"What about that prisoner?"
"This was the main office. Nazis are big on record-keeping."
The corporal opened a drawer and began to finger through the files.
"I don't remember his name," he said. "It was sort of funny, but if I see it... Hey, yeah, this is him."
He removed a manila folder. On the tab, in immaculate cursive, was written, "Ichak Levitsky."
"They measured them, weighed them. Look. The guy was losing like 10 pounds a week."
Kaufman studied the dossier. The corporal peered over his shoulder.
"You knew him?"
Kaufman asked.
"Nah, but there was a lot of commotion. I was on sentry when they brought the guy in. All he would say is, 'My name is Ichak Levitsky. My number is...'"
"Number?"
They numbered them at Auschwitz. Tattoos on the forearm. Auschwitz was a death camp. Dora was a work camp. But
he swallowed.
All the camps were death camps.
But he was here at Dora.
Guess he got around. Nazis like to shuffle campers. Here. He pointed to a note along the side of the binder. They have him listed as Chemischer Wissenschaftler. That'd make him an MVP.
Scientists at Dora Mittelbau?
They made missiles. You didn't know that? That's what all the tunnels were for. Underground factories. Assembly lines. Except the tunnels that were barracks for prisoners. And tunnels for hanging. We found some of them, too. Hard to imagine. I guess it's all kind of hard to imagine. Kaufman didn't want to imagine. He'd seen enough. Smelled enough. He could feel the noose himself. He looked back at the stats.
Remember anything else about him, Ikak Levitsky?
Just that he was really old. But they all looked really old. The corporal's eyes had become hollow and sad, and he was looking considerably less youthful himself. Kaufman took a truncated breath.
You saved a lot of people, son.
The corporal clacked his gum. I'm not so sure anybody's saved who walks out of this place. He continued to chew in silence, his jaw muscle popping in and out. They surveyed the floor for a while, then Kaufman offered the corporal his bandaged hand and thanked him. He was about to head back to the jeep, but got stopped in the doorway.
What's that?
He asked. A green tarp draped a bulky mound over by the side of the building. The corporal reached out. Sir, I don't think you should... But Kaufman was already peeling back the corner of the canvas.
Shoes?
He wondered aloud. And that's what it was. That's all. Shoes. Mud-coated. Laceless. A 12-foot pyramid of shoes. Men's shoes, all of them. Except for one tiny brown pair of Oxfords near the bottom. Those had belonged to a child. Chapter 56.
Morning, soldier. Get enough shut-eye?
Kaufman rubbed his eyes with his bandaged hands, shambled out of the house onto the patio. Samuels was sunning himself in a metal lawn chair, shirtless, his feet propped on an empty cement planter.
Thanks for letting me sleep in. I've been up for almost 2 days. Takes its toll.
It all takes its toll, pal. Pull up a seat. I'll get Ulrika to bring you some breakfast.
No thanks. Don't think I'm ready to eat just yet.
She can give you a shave, too.
Maybe later.
You can't let it take hold. Gotta work at it.
Samuel slipped off his shades.
Not just for yourself. For the Jews.
Kaufman pulled over a chair and plopped himself down. A small metal table held a carafe and a couple of glasses. The lieutenant gestured to it.
Lemonade. Help yourself.
Kaufman did.
Sweet.
Found a 5-pound bag of sugar in the kitchen when we took over this place. Do you believe it? It's amazing the stuff those Germans had socked away. At first, I was just grabbing things. Anything. Just my little way of getting back at them. But it wasn't enough. There's no getting back at them.
He poured himself a glass and downed it. Kaufman watched a bead of sweat trail down the lieutenant's hairless chest and collect in a tiny pool around his dangling dog tags. The lieutenant caught his eye.
Didn't wear a mezuzah because I was trying to blend. Boot camp was lousy with anti-Semites. I'd never had a fist fight my entire life, and here I am getting into it every other day. Then they call out your name and ask what religion you are. And I'm only a 3-day-a-year Jew as it is. but you gotta say something. At first, I didn't own up to any religion, but then everyone started coming on to me to join their club, so I went back and told them, yeah, I was Jewish. Except, get this, the army doesn't say Jewish, they say Hebrew. What's a Hebrew? I'm a Jew. So now I got this big H on my tags. He held up the issued pendants. Course, once I made rank, no one could say shit to me without getting theirs. And then coming on these camps. He kissed the tags. Now I'm proud of this fucking H. Kaufman considered showing the lieutenant his bar mitzvah mezuzah, but instead, he changed the subject.
So, you off today? He asked.
It's all about the occupation government now. I'm just waiting for orders. Soon as I finish here, I'm going back to the States. I'm gonna get my degree, and I'm never gonna set foot in this goddamn country again. He poured another glass, let out a sigh, and hung his head back on the chair. You had to see it for yourself, he said. Kaufman brought the glass to his mouth. The juice washed against his lips, tickled his tongue, and flowed down his throat, cool, soothing. But nothing would soothe the wound in the center of his chest. Shrapnel from a pair of shoes.
I wanted to fight, Kaufman said. I wanted it so bad. I'd heard the reports. Didn't need Pearl Harbor.
So, what stopped you?
4F. But believe me, I tried. After they turned me down in Providence, I went up to Boston, but they wouldn't take me either.
You had that limp before your little train excursion?
Doesn't usually show. That spill messed it up again. But there's no getting around the scar.
Kaufman hoisted his pants leg. A crimson groove spanned a 9-inch arc around his left knee. The lieutenant whistled. Kinda hard to slide by with that one. Me? All I had to do was memorize the eye chart. Fought blind for 2 years, sneaking my glasses at every chance I could. He tapped the lenses. Now, who gives a shit? Kaufman gazed up at the hazy midday sun. That same sun was shining down on Jew and German alike. No praise, no blame, no commentary at all. Same for the wind and the rain, moon and stars. Same for the night. Nature takes no sides. So, who does give a shit? God? Who's God? Whose God proclaims one a chosen people and one not? And what people can proclaim a sentence on another, a death sentence no less? The sky blurred and burned. It seemed to smolder like Jews going up in smoke. Kaufman finally let Ulrika slip him some eggs. Then he went back to bed and slept the rest of the day. Chapter 57.
Baruch atah Adonai.
First Rebbe I've seen with a clerical collar.
Kaufman fidgeted on the rusted folding chair. He's Protestant. We don't have a rabbi. Hey, it's still Shabbos, and after what we've been through, it's more about each other than whatever's up there. Samuels gestured heavenward. Kaufman looked up at the evening sky. They were in what had once been a Catholic chapel, but was now pretty much void of anything resembling a religious tradition, including a roof. A small group of servicemen, some with tallit and yarmulkes, huddled together before a bludgeoned altar. The chaplain, a pale man with a round face and dull eyes, finished the prayer and lit two candles in the center of a rickety card table. Then the men took turns reading from army-issue prayer books. Kaufman thumbed ahead to see how long the service would be, and was pleased to note that the military was all for abbreviation. When it came his turn to read, he hiked his tzitzis up over his shoulders, took the book in his cotton-clad hooks, and read aloud like the best of them. The air was brisk and whistled over their heads. Kaufman slouched in the passenger seat and viewed the starless sky through the open top of the jeep. Reminded him of another evening's cruise, one he'd rather forget. He sat back up and gave a look at the lieutenant, just to make sure he wasn't suddenly female and drinking from a pewter flask. He wasn't. Kaufman was almost disappointed. He lounged back against the stiff vinyl, erased Therese from his mind, and began to picture Allegra. He'd never taken a drive anywhere with her, never gone out to dinner, a movie. He'd hardly even known her. In fact, he'd spent more time with the lieutenant.
"Got a gal back home?" asked Kaufman.
Yeah. Well, nah, not really. I had a gal. We were going to get engaged, but she didn't want me to enlist. Nobody wanted me to enlist. My ma broke out in hives. But my girl, Ellie, she said if I got killed over here, she'd kill me. You believe that? She wouldn't even see me off when I went to boot camp. I wrote her a bunch of times. Never heard a word. Then we shipped out. Guys always talk about their girls. Write letters, show pictures. I just write my sister. Tell them she's my steady. They'll never know. You got anybody? Kaufman watched Samuels watch the road as it unspooled before them.
Nah, broke up when the water started getting rough. I can tread all right, but didn't want her going down. And now I can't shake her.
You will.
Truth is, I don't want to. She was...
Kaufman could see her in the headlights, the winding road like a lock of raven hair.
Well, it wouldn't have worked out anyways.
Samuels cocked his head. Not Jewish, huh?
Most definitely not,
Kaufman answered. Well, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, what are you gonna do?
Chapter 58. If this was safe haven, it was only so by comparison to a Nazi camp. Cement buildings surrounded by barbed wire. These people were still prisoners.
This is the most we can do, Samuel said as they drove through the gates. There's millions of them. Some displacement camps are better than others. UN will be stepping in soon, but can't see how much it'll improve. They're called irrepatriables. How's that for a label? Problem is finding countries who will patriate them.
They passed a queue of men and women jostling for food. Kaufman noticed how they grabbed for their tin plates and devoured whatever slop was on it before they'd even sat down.
"Looks grim,"
he said, and knew it was an understatement. Samuels pulled over to a small building with a British flag out front.
"Yeah, they probably only get one meal a day. Maybe some will get back to their families if they still have them. If they don't die first. You'll have to wait here. We're lucky enough to gain entrance, but let me do the talking to the Limeys."
Kaufman didn't want to think about Dora Middlebow anymore, but that's all he could think about. It was as if he was back in the tunnel, encased in the dark. But those creatures he'd imagined, clawing after him, suddenly became real. He was surrounded by a crew of walking corpses. A yellowed hand dug into his pocket. He pinched it by the wrist, saw it was connected to a short man with dark hollows around his eyes and open sores over most of his exposed flesh. The man's mouth opened wordless, revealing black teeth and bloody gums. He yanked his yellow hand away and clutched it to his breast. Then he fell to the ground and wrapped himself around Kaufman's ankles. Another man helped him up and escorted him off. The others just stared. They all had hollow eyes. Kaufman lifted his bandaged paws to his face, half to block out the images, half to block out the smell. He'd backed away and cut around the side of the building. There was a dusty street and fewer people. He walked quickly and had no plan on stopping. He noticed other residents, active with various projects, pushing carts of supplies, planting crops. In front of one building, he saw a group of men erecting a hand-lettered sign. It said, "Scola," but the L had a funny line through it. These men looked just as sickly as the first group, but at least they were smiling. One of them caught sight of Kaufman and pointed up to the sign. Kaufman nodded. The man nodded back. "Shgova," he seemed to say. Kaufman repeated the word. The man came over, reached out to shake Kaufman's hand, then saw the bandages. He recoiled, shaking his head.
"Don't worry," Kaufman said. "It's nothing major."
"You are Amerikanski?"
The man, fragile but energetic, straightened his tie. His tie was soiled, so was his suit, which seemed to have been designed for someone twice his size. Kaufman considered his own borrowed khakis.
"American, yes."
He lifted a mitten and tapped the man's hand. The man nodded again. Kaufman nodded.
"Shkowa," he said.
The man gestured to the sign.
"We are to be making school, learning new. Everybody learning new for to be working hard. We want working hard. We want normal. America."
He gave a salute and forced a smile.
"School. Good,"
Kaufman said. Then he nodded again and begged off, continuing down the road. He really didn't want to relate anymore. It was too much. Maybe someone was building a bar somewhere. He was circling back to headquarters by a different route when he saw another resident, alone, off by herself. His chest caved. She reminded him of his mother.
"Nice detail."
The old woman put down her pencil and looked up at Kaufman curiously. He was surprised to find himself standing beside her.
"Didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry," he said.
No, sorry,"
she said in a thick, whispery voice. She continued to look at him for a moment, her eyes seeming to search his features for some point of recognition. Then she turned back to her sketch pad.
"You're good,"
said Kaufman.
"I am amateur."
On the page was a small team of younger women, sullenly peeling potatoes besides a ramshackle barracks. Behind them was a sagging barbed wire fence with a few crows perched along the top. Kaufman followed the woman's gaze. It was a pretty faithful depiction. About a block away was the exact same scene in real life.
Better than amateur. You could probably draw anything.
Anything?
She asked, but didn't look up.
What? Butterflies? I draw what is.
I wasn't suggesting.
Art is not for make-believe.
Kaufman didn't paint or draw, but he did make-believe, didn't he? Wasn't that what drinking was all about? Make-believe? The old woman had smacked his face harder than his mother ever had. Even though his hands were swathed, he could feel them shaking. He needed to get back home. America. Land of make-believe. He looked again at the drawing. It was absolutely perfect. Sad. Empty. Perfect. As it happened, there'd be no rushing back to the States. Turned out the next transport wouldn't be returning to Boston till the following week. Also turned out that Ichak Levitsky was nowhere to be found, at least not in a displacement camp. Lieutenant Samuels had returned empty-handed. The last hope was to check military files. After all, if the prisoner had been useful to the enemy, he may have become equally useful to the American cause. The U.S. had been snapping up smart European Jews for years. Why not Levitsky? Problem was, the files were with General Marchbanks.
You're pushing your luck here, Koffler. You too, Lieutenant. Private Walsh is a war hero.
Was a war hero,
Kaufman countered.
Seems somebody cut the celebration short of the fellow's homecoming.
Marchbanks stood up. He towered over 6 feet. Had a bristle of graying hair on top that added another inch or two. He strode around to the front of the desk, looked from Kaufman to Samuels, and back over to Kaufman. Then, slicing across the top of the desk with the back of his hand, he sent a sheaf of papers cascading to the floor. Marchbanks sat himself on the cleared surface and folded his hands on his knee. His bony fingers wove together in a knot.
"You think I have authority here?" You think any one single person has authority? We're still fighting a war, in case you hadn't noticed. There's things underway that Truman doesn't even have a clue about. I follow orders, but where those orders originate is none of my goddamn business. You got that? Whether I like pinning a purple heart to some GI's tit or not is immaterial. And what happens to some prisoner once he's liberated is equally immaterial. I don't care if he goes to a rotten DP camp or Shangri-La. All I care about is winning this crummy war.
He closed his eyes, as if doing so would make everything disappear. When he opened them again, they launched missiles.
I know you're not with any magazine, Koffler. I got a list of reporters on mimeograph. Besides, what kind of notes are you going to take with those stumps you got there? You couldn't even play Parcheesi.
Kaufman stood his ground.
But you knew that the first time we met, General. You also knew it's not easy for some civilian to be standing in your vaunted HQ. So who's signing my orders? And about the name, you're right. It's not Koffler. It's Kaufman. Sometimes it's better not to advertise being Jewish. Especially in a Nazi camp.
The General's spine sagged. He rose and slowly crossed over to a four-tiered filing cabinet, pulled open a drawer, and flipped through a series of files, mumbling to himself. He sighed and raised a folder in the air, and turned away as its contents slipped out and fluttered to the floor. Samuels gave Kaufman a nudge, and they moved over to the spilled documents. Stamped in red ink, diagonally across the top sheet, was the word, "Classified." In smaller letters below was a name. Levitsky. Ikak.
Getting cloudy.
The general leaned on the windowsill and peered out.
Gonna be some dark days ahead of us, gentlemen.
Chapter 59.
Allow me to look, please, at bondage.
Ulrika took one of Kaufman's clumps in her fragile hands. Hands like from some tiny Victorian doll, but with ragged nails gnawed down to the pink. Her eyes avoided his, and he obliged by concentrating solely on the unveiling, as she methodically began to peel away the gauze. Slowly, a familiar shape began to appear. The final layer removed, Kaufman was surprised to see only some shiny patches of red. Overall, the hand was miraculously restored. She repeated the process with the other appendage, and revealed similar results.
More ointments.
She went over to the cupboard and took out a small jar.
What is that stuff? Some kind of magic potion?
It's nestle. Schwergattigish nestle.
Nestle?
Nestle. Plant medicine.
Uh-huh. Well, whatever it is, thanks.
Kaufman worked his fingers.
Everything needing know. In plants.
Ulrika looked at him for a moment. A frightened doe in the woods. She was German, but how different from the Polish Jews that survived in the camps. He wondered what it would mean to be rescued, if the damage had already been done. What survives? Who survives? She brushed a limp strand of hair off her pallid face and returned her attention to nursing his renewed flesh. Kaufman held the glass of lemonade in his naked hand. The cool wet of the surface tickled his palm. His hands looked like something newborn, larval. He hadn't even realized how much he'd missed them.
It seems so strange, coming all the way over here, not knowing what I'd find or what I was even looking for, and then only to turn and head straight back.
He took a sip and watched as the sun slowly dipped behind the tree line. Samuels flipped up his amber lenses.
I didn't know what I was doing here either. Still don't. But I know I had to do it. So did you.
Yeah, I guess I did.
Kaufman placed the empty glass down on the patio and stretched his arms over his head, lifted himself onto the back of the chair, and popped a couple of vertebrae.
And now it's time to get back in the game. Find me a rocket scientist. Any ideas?
Nope, but I'm a ways away down the chain.
Hard to figure out from those papers. Marchbanks didn't give us much time.
You have a name and a location?
Columbia, yeah. But I don't have anybody from the Brotherhood opening doors over there, and I suspect whatever classified department our guy is in, security is going to be tight.
Probably.
Samuels nodded and downed the rest of his drink.
But I do know Levitsky is Polish.
Kaufman played with his fingers as if they were tinkling ivories on a baby grand.
I could see what I could scan at Ellis Island, slip a clerk a fin, flip through some records.
Or you could find yourself a Polish community over there. Polish Jews, that is. Ask around. This melting pot thing, it's a fairy tale. People don't really want to assimilate.
You know, I've met French Jews, Indian Jews. It's great, believe me. Open my eyes. But down inside, I just want to be with New Jersey Jews. My folks, they take us into the city. We used to go downtown, Ludlow Street, Suffolk, Rivington. Jews from all over. You could start there. It's a veritable Palestine.
You just saved me a trip to Ellis Island.
Kaufman picked up his glass.
How about another lemonade?
With the trajectory mapped out, Kaufman figured it was time to make contact stateside. The lieutenant brought him down to base camp, where he was able to dash off a couple of telegrams. One went out to Mara, assuring her that he was closing in on the facts relating to Miss Dora and ready to return. The other was for Goldie, basically just to say, Shalom. After the telegrams were sent, Kaufman had one further request, getting a transport to New York. No point flying back to Boston.
Will New Jersey do? Asked the lieutenant.
His shirt was pressed to perfection. Ulrika had worked her miracles on the Egyptian cotton as skillfully as she had on his front paws. Kaufman slipped it on and buttoned it with reverence.
"I owe you a pair of pants,"
he said, stepping out of his room to greet Samuels.
"Khaki suits you," responded the lieutenant. "Shame you couldn't serve. You would have made one sharp cadet."
Kaufman rubbed his freshly shaven face. He glanced around to see if he could spot Ulrika. Not a sign. He could see into the kitchen, though, and on the enameled tin table, basking in a wash of gold, was a vase of the wildflowers he'd picked for her that morning. He'd left them by the sink, along with a simple note. Danke schön. Back to the evac hospital. Not quite as chaotic as it had been a week and a half ago, but still not the Newport Country Club. Samuels drove the jeep up to a plane, and they bounded out.
"This is it,"
the lieutenant announced and patted her flank. Kaufman looked up at the monstrosity. At least he'd be able to hold a bucket more efficiently on this trip.
"Thanks,"
he said, and thrust out his hand. The flesh of their palms smacked together.
"It was a pleasure," replied the lieutenant.
"So what are you going to be studying when you get back? I never asked."
"Forensics. Figure if I can hold my own in the army, the police force will be a piece of kugel."
"Well, Samuels, we could find ourselves partnering after all."
"I don't know. I hear private dicks can be pretty annoying."
"Funny. I hear the same about cops. See you in Shul."
"I'll save you a seat."
And their hands parted company, and Kaufman boarded the transport for the States. That's it for part two of Kaufman's Holiday, The Man in the Tunnel, episode 9. Chapters 54 to 59. We'll hit the third and final part of this saga next time around, so hang tight. Speaking of tight, Sunday Night Noir is hosted by Radio Free Brooklyn, and they could sure use some extra cabbage to balance the budget. In other words, cough it up. Go on. Go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge. You can also sponsor a show, like Kaufman's Holiday, for instance. Might even get you a medal pinned to your tit. Once again, special thanks to Chris Durian for our theme song, Case Closed. You can probably hum along with it by now. And to Arthur Rosen for those piano improvisations that glue all the chapters together. Enough for now. Gotta finish my kugel. This is Matt Mittler signing off. But I'll be back. You'll hear me coming. My Florsheim is clacking on the cobblestones.